hair products. More at Captera.com.
Welcome to Radioactivity on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm filling in today for Rob Lori. He will be back tomorrow morning at 11. And our first topic today will be Pride Month 2019. Our guests are from the Gulfport Library's LGBTQ Resource Center. And later on, we're going to look at some bills being considered in Tallahassee on a range of issues like criminal justice reform and the plant chemical CBD. And we'll take your calls. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. Before we get to our guests, we're going to start the show with a couple of comments that were left by listeners about the last two programs. On Monday, we talked about proposed toll roads through rural Florida. And yesterday, we played debate from the floor of the Florida Senate. Before the Senate approved a bill that will allow Florida teachers to carry guns in the classrooms. So here are a couple of callers commenting about our last two shows.
Hey, Sean. This is Ron from West Tampa. You know, I just wanted to comment on Monday, April the 22nd show. First of all, I want to give a shout out to a guy that I've heard often before, Gary from Dunedin. I haven't met Gary, but when I listen to him call, I have to say that my heart goes out to what he's saying, and Gary, I'm 1,000% behind you. As a native Floridian myself, and at the risk of sounding a little bit possessive, we who have been here a while, we understand the tremendous cost that is being paid by our state in the form of this runaway growth that amazingly so many people still are enamored with, and amazingly so many other people think is ultimately good and can go on forever. They don't realize that growth is a myth. And the way it has been parlayed here in the state of Florida by unscrupulous developers and politicians who are beholden to them from the local level on up, it makes it even more difficult to get the message across. Some callers were very adamant about how we have to move in the future. We have to embrace this growth, that we can't live in the past. This has nothing to do with living in the past. This has to do with the common sense of saying that we cannot accommodate everybody in the world just because they have been sold on the idea that Florida is paradise. Specifically, the three toll roads that are now, first and foremost, such an important issue statewide that are going to just completely destroy so many tens of thousands of acres of habitat.
So the districts that do arm the teachers, what will we talking about when a teacher finds that another student is a threat and resorts to the firearm to stop the student? What will we talk about then? We'll say, well, this was such a bad idea, we got to reverse this. And that's what it's going to take. A teacher has to actually kill a student for us to know and believe that it's a bad idea to arm teachers in school. That's what it's going to take, because we do live in Florida, where we vote against our own best interest.
Well, those were two listeners commenting about our last two shows, and they're on our website, WMNF.org/news, if you want to go back and listen. Later on in the broadcast, I'm going to give out the number for you to leave a voicemail about today's show, and you can always listen to previous shows, comment on the stories on our website. You can also join us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WMNF News. And I should also say that Blanny Whalen is helping us to film today's show on Facebook Live. So if you go to facebook.com/WMNF Community Radio, you can watch the show there. So let's turn to our first guest. St. Pete Pride Festival is Sunday, June 23rd, that is, and for several weeks before that date, communities in Pinellas County are celebrating Pride Month 2019, and our guests here in the studio will talk about some of the Pride Month events that are going on, and they're from the LGBTQ Resource Center of Gulfport, and it's based at the Gulfport Library. And I want to welcome our guest. Susan Gore is the board chair of the LGBTQ Resource Center, and Brittany Baldwin is a board member. Welcome to WMNF's Radioactivity, Brittany and Susan.
Thank you for having us.
I should turn your mics on.
Yeah, that might
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and I'm glad you came. Before we get to Pride Month, let's first talk about your group. What is the LGBTQ Resource Center?
The Resource Center is a collection of over 5,000 books, DVDs, other resources that are part of the library's collection. And it was started in 2014 by the Circle of Friends, which is an auxiliary group that supports the library. We got a large donation of books, and some people on the Circle of Friends said, we should have a resource center, not knowing that there was no such thing in the state of Florida in a library. We are the first and to date only resource center, LGBTQ resource center in the state of Florida in a public library. So we've grown from a few hundred books to, like I said, over 5,000. We do programming, we have speakers, we do fundraisers. So it's a very important organization in Gulfport and beyond.
And before we get on further too much about the Pride Month, I should talk about what's in the news. And the city of Tampa just elected an LGBTQ mayor, the first major city in the Southeast to elect an LGBT woman as mayor. Your thoughts about that?
I had the privilege of working with Jane Castor at the USF Diversity Conference a couple of years ago. She's impressive. I think she brings a great vision. Yes, she's a lesbian, and she has a much broader agenda for the city, and I'm excited.
Our guests are from the LGBTQ Resource Center at the Gulfport Library. Susan Gore is the board chair you just heard. We also have Brittany Baldwin, a board member of the LGBTQ Resource Center. And we're talking about the Pride Month activities of 2019. But before we move too far from the library itself, the library is up for an award in part because of the actions that you do there.
We are very fortunate. Representative Charlie Crist nominated the library for an award. It's the top federal award you can get, called the Institute for Museum and Library Services Gold Medal. We'll know on May 7th. We're one of 15 finalists. We're going up against libraries like the LA County Public Library System. And here we are in our little town of 12,500. But we have been recognized not only by this nomination, but last year, the American Library Association named our resource center the top resource center in North America. So we are very fortunate to have gained some level of visibility for our work.
You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. You might be listening on WMNF.org or the WMNF app, or you might be watching on Facebook.com/WMNF Community Radio. And our guests are Susan and Brittany. Susan Gore is the board chair. Brittany Baldwin is a board member of the LGBTQ Resource Center, which is based at the Gulfport Library. And my name is Sean Canaan. I'm filling in for Rob Lori. He'll be back tomorrow on Radioactivity at 11 in the morning. Let's talk now about the events during Pride Month that you're hosting. And I should say that you can find out any of these events by going to their website. The website of the LGBTQ Resource Center is mygulfport.us/LGBTQ-resources. And the very first thing that's happening is there's a march and a pride flag raising. What's going to be happening on May 30th?
So Thursday, May 30th, we have the Pride March, where it's going to be beginning at the Gulfport Casino and ending at our public library. And then followed by that, we'll have the marching band, the Gecko. I always say it wrong.
Gecko Amalgamated Community Band or something like that. It's great fun.
Yes. So the Gecko Amalgamated Marching Band will be kind of assisting with that as well. And that's going to start at 6. The march starts at 6. The flag raising starts at 6:30, where we're going to be raising the LGBTQ flag during the ceremony. And that's going to be featuring Gulfport City officials, State Representative Jennifer Webb, and other people who are going to be taking part in those activities. And then following the ceremony, we're going to have an opening of the third annual Art Out. So we're asking people to join us for that, where we're going to have lots of different art on display for that event as well.
And the Art Out is a month-long exhibit of multimedia work by local LGBTQ artists, and it's at the Gulfport Library.
Yes.
So that's May 30th. That kicks off the Pride Month, in which most of the month of June is Pride Month. And one of the events that you'll be having, you've already mentioned that State Senator State Representative Jennifer Webb, who is a Gulfport resident and represents Gulfport, will be at your opening, your sidewalk march, but she's also speaking on June 6th. What will Jennifer Webb, Representative Jennifer Webb, be speaking about?
Jennifer will be speaking about legislation of particular interest to LGBTQ Floridians, things like the Workforce Competitive Act. She has other interests in the environment, in protection for domestic violence victims. So she's going to come and really do her perspective on how things have moved forward in the state of Florida and, of course, open it up to questions. She's fabulous. I helped campaign for Jennifer, and she is the real deal.
She ran a couple of years ago against Kathleen Peters, and Kathleen Peters was elected, but then Kathleen Peters now is in the Senate and ran for the Senate, and so Jennifer Webb ran for the House again and was elected this time just last November, I think it was, yeah.
It was, and she is the first out lesbian in the Florida State Legislature. We're very proud to claim her.
You're listening to 88.5 FM. It's 11:17 in the morning. This is Radioactivity on WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org, the WMNF app, and streaming live on Facebook. And my name is Sean Canaan. I'm filling in for Rob Lori. He'll be back tomorrow morning at 11. We're talking with guests from the LGBTQ Resource Center of Gulfport. Susan Gore is the board chair. Brittany Baldwin is a board member. We're talking about all the events of Pride Month 2019. And if you'd like to join this conversation, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. Another guest, another speaker that you'll be having during the Pride Month in June is on June 12th, is Judge Robert W. Lee, and he is noteworthy. Why is Judge Robert W. Lee noteworthy?
Not to be confused with Robert E. Lee.
Exactly.
He was the first openly gay person appointed as a judge in the state of Florida in 1997. And what he'll talk about is all the barriers to being an attorney, being a judge in the state of Florida. Until 1979, it was illegal to be an attorney.
Wait, what do you mean? It was on the books that it was illegal?
Yes. So to be an attorney or a judge in the state of Florida. Well, as one of your callers says, it's Florida, duh.
So the Florida legislature had passed a law that said that you couldn't be...
Yes.
You couldn't pass the bar or something like that.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court overturned that, and Judge Lee was appointed in 1997. So he's going to talk about the history of legal roadblocks.
I think that'll surprise a lot of listeners that 1997, I mean, if we think about where we were in 1997, that before that, the state of Florida did not have an openly gay judge.
Until 79, it was illegal. After 79, you could be a judge or a lawyer, but there was no one appointed until 97. But to your point, Sean, Jennifer's our first openly lesbian legislator, and it's 2019.
Yeah,
there are a lot of firsts happening right now.
Still.
Our guests are from the LGBTQ Resource Center of Gulfport. Susan Gore is the board chair, and Brittany Baldwin is a board member. And we'd like to take your calls if you want to call us, 813-239-9663. If you have any questions about Pride Month. And Judge Lee will be talking about Welcome to Florida, LGBTQ Attorneys Need Not Apply, and that's June 12th. And then the following day, on June 13th, is the documentary Stonewall Uprising.
We keep the month packed with programming during June, and then we just fall over and recoup on July. On June 13th, the film Stonewall Uprising is one of three documentaries about the time when finally patrons of gay bars had routinely been shaken down by police, arrested by police. Bar owners were paying bribes to police not to close them down. And when the police came to the Stonewall Inn, a bar in Greenwich Village, New York City, some of the patrons decided enough was enough. And in fact, it was the transgender patrons who started complaining, resisting arrest, and it broke into a three-day riot.
And this documentary will document the Stonewall Uprising.
Yes.
And that's on June 13th at 7 o'clock. Is that also at the Gulfport Library?
It is. And all of the events we have at the library are free, by the way. It's a public service we're pleased to offer.
813-239-9663 if you'd like to join this conversation. We're talking about Pride Month 2019, which is most of June. It also spills into May. And we have our guests are from the LGBTQ Resource Center. Susan Gore is the board chair and Brittany Baldwin is the board member there. It's based in Gulfport. And then you have a fundraiser on June 20th, and we're not going to mention prices, but what will you be raising funds for, and what is the fundraiser itself?
The fundraiser itself is going to be a great fun show, the Scott and Patty Show. Matthew McGee is well known in the area as a drag performer and a talented writer. So he and his sidekick, Scott, are going to do a show about a mother-son TV show, and it will be laugh out loud, split your sides funny. We always sell out. I won't name prices either, but there are 177 seats at the Katherine Hickman Theater, and they will sell out fast. The fundraiser provides us the ability to do things like a scholarship, which Brittany wants to talk about.
So basically, this year is our first ever Resource Center LGBTQ Scholarship Award, and we are intending to help students in the area with their postgraduate education. It can be college, it can be trade school, it could be graduate level school. Basically, we're asking for Gulfport residents that are 16 years of age or older to apply for their post-secondary education assistance with this scholarship. We're asking for a minimum of a 2.5 GPA. We're asking students to fill out some bio information just to let us know what they're doing in the community, how they identify themselves as LGBTQ. And we're looking to hopefully get some students involved. I think it's really important that Gulfport is very proud of their LGBTQ community, but I think it's important for our younger kids, even though the scholarship is for any student, any age, I think it's important that our students step up and be proud of who they are and not step back from that. And this scholarship is a great way to help them get to school, but it's also a really great way for them to kind of stand up for themselves in the community and represent who they are as a person and continue themselves, you know, as far as their education goes. So I'm really excited to be a part of this. And obviously to be a part of this group is a big deal for me, but this scholarship is great. And I think it's going to provide a lot of good opportunities for whoever decides to apply. The deadline to apply is June 3rd. So we want to get those applicants in for sure.
And you mentioned it, but it's worth reiterating. It's for Gulfport residents only. So that's a small percentage of our audience. But if you happen to know someone who's at Boca Ciega High School,
that's right.
or maybe one of the, people can go to schools further away. But if you know someone who lives in Gulfport and is thinking about going to college or to trade school, and they should apply for this LGBTQ scholarship.
Absolutely.
And just to make it a little easier, we need that person to have an Gulfport address. So a student may be outside of Gulfport, but their parents live in Gulfport or their guardian is in Gulfport. So it's not quite as confined. We are eager to get more candidates. The first year, it's always hard to get the word out, and we're excited. We're going to have a party on the 27th of June to celebrate both the awarding of the scholarship and our new status as a 501c3. We just got our letter from the IRS recognizing us as a nonprofit.
And if people want to apply to that scholarship or want to find out anything else about the LGBTQ Resource Center in Gulfport, mygulfport.us/LGBTQ-resources. I imagine the scholarship information is on that page as well.
Yes, it is.
And then, so we've been talking here about the Gulfport events, but it also, I think the big event that's outside of Gulfport, but still in South Pinellas, is June 23rd, St. Pete Pride. Are you involved in the St. Pete Pride Festival? And tell people what happens there.
We will be involved both in the parade and in the festival. On the festival day, we'll have a booth, and my hope is we'll have temporary tattoos. So you can come and get your little logo for the Gulfport Resource Center at that booth. And we want to help educate people about what it is that's available. Community supported, publicly funded. Gulfport is unique in that regard, and we want to share that message.
And Sorry, and just to piggyback off of that, I think it's important too that even St. Pete, Tampa residents, if they're coming to Pride, like it's not just for Gulfport. This resource center is for everybody. So I think it's great that we're going to be at the at Pride and kind of putting that word out too. It's not
just
for Gulfport folks. It's for everybody. So
the library is part of the Pinellas County system, and I have to give a shout out to the director of the library, Dave Mather. He is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you both, Susan and Brittany, for coming on WMNS 88.5 Radioactivity today. Susan and Brittany, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Susan Gore is the board chair of the LGBTQ Resource Center at Gulfport, and Brittany Baldwin is a board member. And we're going to be right back with more of Radioactivity on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. We're going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll be right back. Stay with us. Santana for your listening enjoyment from Woodstock 1969. I'm Sean Canaan. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org, and the WMNF app. You're listening to Radioactivity. Rob will be back tomorrow at 11. I'm filling in now, and we're going to transition from the LGBTQ Resource Center in South Pinellas. We're going to transition up to Tallahassee, and we're going to hear about some of the things that are going on in Tallahassee, some of the proposals that are happening. And yesterday we talked about a big one. The Florida Senate voted after the show, or maybe it was right at the end of the show, they voted to support letting school districts allow teachers to carry guns once the teachers are trained and if they are willing to. And that's something we could talk about if you'd like to continue that conversation from yesterday. Also, I want to play this story about CBD. And it comes from WLRN, which is a Miami station, a Florida Public Radio affiliate. And gummy bears, oils, cocktails, ice creams, products with CBD in them have practically become ubiquitous in Florida. The chemical CBD comes from the cannabis plant. We'll hear this story from WLRN's Danny Rivero, who reports that the fact is leaving business owners in kind of a gray zone. And we'll be back to take your calls at 813-239-9663 after we hear this report from Danny Rivero.
The Saturday morning farmers market. There's fresh fruits and veggies, crafts by local artists, fresh baked empanadas, and two stands selling a product called CBD. It's a chemical found in marijuana, but also in industrial hemp. Hemp and marijuana are related, but they're not the same plant. And to be clear, despite the suggestive branding, CBD does not get you high. Not at all.
CB to the D.
Drew Darden runs a skin and hair products company called Tree Hugging Soap. He says he uses it to treat back pain caused by sciatica. He sells CBD-infused lotions for all kinds of conditions.
Women's cramps, again, sciatica, arthritis. I mean, talking about major pain, people that suffer with every day. So, I don't know, man. When I tried, I thought someone had to put voodoo or something on me because I couldn't believe how well it worked.
As you can hear, Darden swears by this stuff. He says he trusts it more than synthetic medication.
This is natural, you know, and it works.
But to be clear, none of these claims about CBD are approved by the Federal Drug Administration or the state of Florida. These open questions are leading to changes in the way businesses can operate, sometimes overnight, especially as CBD has become a lot more mainstream. For more than a year, there was a tent selling CBD at another farmer's market at the University of Miami Jackson Memorial Hospital campus. Now, there's no tent to be found.
We're just trying to get support of our customers.
Andrew Becerra is a sales rep for a local CBD manufacturer called Physicians Preferred. He says a few weeks earlier, they got a call saying the university wouldn't allow them to sell CBD products here anymore. So now he's collecting petitions to be allowed back.
I've got nurses, I've got lots of staff, techs, students, social workers, nursing managers, just quite a different variety. IT. There's a lot of people here that, you know, just come to the market and, you know, just see what it's about.
I talked to a few of these people who signed the petitions. They all said CBD is still too controversial for medical professionals to publicly talk about using it. One emergency room physician said CBD helped her get over a bad shoulder pain. Claims about health benefits can open up a can of worms for things like CBD. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration doesn't regulate the chemical, yet, but it is increasingly keeping an eye on the market. In March, FDA Director Scott Gottlieb talked about that to the U.S. Senate.
I will take enforcement action against CBD products that are on the market if manufacturers are making what I consider over-the-line claims. So if you're marketing CBD and you're claiming it can cure cancer or prevent Alzheimer's disease, we're going to take action against that because that could mislead a patient into foregoing otherwise effective therapy.
The following week, a shop in Hollywood called Dr. Stern CBD said they were selling CBD products like crazy. Paul Fisher is the store's manager.
For the edibles, what we have gummy bears, either a sour or a regular flavored gummy bear, and we also offer a sugar-free lollipop. We have a very good, superior product.
The day before this visit, the FDA sent a warning letter to a different company a few miles away about how it was marketing CBD products. The company's website claimed CBD can help fight cancer, arthritis, Alzheimer's disease, and PTSD. When I asked Fisher about whether he's worried about similar claims on his company's website, the store's owner intervenes.
Sir, go home.
Out?
Thank you very much. Go home. Okay. What, you stupid or what? Well, I'm stupid.
He kicks me out of the store. The following day, sections about CBD helping treat cancer and Alzheimer's disease are removed from the website. Florida just elected an unabashedly pro-marijuana commissioner of agriculture, Nikki Fried. Fried says right now, though, the sale of all CBD products is illegal in Florida, no matter if you can find it everywhere. That's at least until lawmakers pass a bill that legalizes hemp in the state, because most of the CBD on the market comes from hemp, not marijuana. There are currently three different bills in the legislature looking to do just that. I'm Danny Rivero in Miami.
Well, that was a report from WLRN, so thank you to that community radio station, that NPR affiliate for sharing that report with us. What do you think about CBD and the fact that the agriculture commissioner is actually says that there's no legal basis for CBD products in Florida because it's considered part of the cannabis family? We're also going to talk in a second about criminal justice reform, but I do want to remind you that it's 11:34 in the morning and you're listening to Radioactivity on 88.5 FM. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm filling in for Rob Lori. He'll be back tomorrow. And earlier in the show, we could talk about this as well if you like. The LGBTQ Resource Center of Gulfport was here and we heard about the Pride Month 2019 and a lot of the activities that are going on for Pride Month. We just heard about CBD, and we also can talk about criminal justice reform. We're going to hear a report about that in just a minute. And one of our emailers wants to talk about yesterday's topic, which is still in the news, of course, and this is about the guns. So yesterday, the Florida Senate, we heard part of the debate on the show yesterday about the Florida Senate considering allowing Florida teachers to carry guns, and that was voted in a positive way. It was voted for yesterday during the show, like at the end of the show or right after the show ended. It was voted pretty narrowly, mostly along party lines. It was one Republican who voted against it. And this caller, Marcherie in Tampa, says, I will be taking my 8-year-old out of public school because of the recent vote to allow teachers to carry guns in classrooms. And so I want to say a couple of things about that. Thank you, Marcherie, for sending that text. And first of all, it hasn't passed yet because it hasn't passed the House. Now, it might pass the House soon. and it hasn't been signed by the governor, but the governor might sign it if it gets to his desk. Also, it's up to the school districts to allow, the school districts will decide whether their counties allow teachers to carry guns. And right now, about half, maybe a little bit fewer than half of the counties are participating in what's called the Marshall program, the Guardian program, where someone besides a full-time classroom teacher can carry a weapon. For example, like a gym coach who might also teach a class could become part of this Guardian program. So it's not, in fact, Hillsboro, it doesn't seem like there's any appetite for it. In Hillsboro, it doesn't seem like there's any appetite for it. In Pinellas, although Pinellas is home to Bob Galtieri, the sheriff who was the head of the commission, the MSD commission, which recommended that classroom teachers be able to carry firearms. So, it's all up in the air right now, but it looks like it might be a possibility for some for school districts to decide. So if you still want to talk about that, that's great. You can call 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. And I do want to talk about criminal justice reform in just a second, but before I do that, I want to tell you what's coming up at the top of the hour. I do want you to stay tuned for another 20 minutes or so, because at the top of the hour, Janelle Irwin will be filling in on Midpoint for NOLA, and she just interviewed the new mayor-elect of Tampa, Jane Castor. And so we're going to hear all or part of that interview coming up at 12:06 on 88.5 FM. So please stay tuned for that, and also keep tuning into Radioactivity, and we're going to talk right now about criminal justice reform. A provision in the Senate's criminal justice reform bill, the state Senate that is, could make a big impact early on if signed into law. Here's a report from WFSU's Ryan Daly, who says that the impact would come in the form of fewer people being incarcerated and significant cost savings for the state.
The Criminal Justice Impact Conference looked at the Senate's criminal justice reform bill, dubbed Florida's First Step Act. Among a number of reforms the measure seeks to bring about, one applies to how much time can get lopped off a sentence for good behavior. Republican Senator Jeff Brandis is the bill's principal backer.
I think it's a huge reform, especially allowing for individuals who have committed themselves while they were incarcerated to doing the right thing.
There, Brandis discusses the provision, which reduces a state requirement that the incarcerated must serve 85% of their sentence to 65%. It's called the Truth in Sentencing Law. State estimators say the bill's gain time provision could take more than 9,000 people out of the prison population by 2023 and potentially save the state as much as $860 million. Matthew Hasbrook with the State Office of Economic and Demographic Research sits on the Criminal Justice Impact Conference.
Right, so this one permits up to, 20 days per month of incentive gain time. And however, this one, unlike the other one we discussed, is applied retroactively for sentences imposed for offenses committed on or after October 1st, 1995.
Because it would be applied retroactively, estimators say about 7,600 people could be removed from the system in the first year. The House has its own omnibus criminal justice reform bill moving through the legislature. But when both chambers' comparable bills cleared their last committee stops last week, only the Senate included the provision changing the truth in sentencing rule. But as both chambers try to find common ground in hopes that a final measure will pass, there are signs of negotiation. And Republican Representative Byron Donald says on the two criminal justice reform bills, there's always a chance the House bill could adopt some Senate language.
I think it's something that I'm open to. I don't want to speak for all my colleagues in the House. Like you guys know around here, everything's being negotiated right now.
Judy Thompson is president of nonprofit advocacy group Forgotten Majority. She has a son who is incarcerated and spoke at last week's House Appropriations Committee meeting. Thompson petitioned representatives to move toward the Senate on gain time.
We can relieve the madness of mass incarceration by increasing gain time across the board for every offender, and we can relieve that most immediately. Your bill does not incorporate any increase in a cap for gain time.
Thompson says if there's no opportunity to use time credited for good behavior, incentive is gone.
What it does is it takes away the hope. It takes away incentives for people.
If the measure passes, the increase in Florida's gain time cap would only apply to inmates sentenced for nonviolent offenses. I'm Ryan Daly.
Well, that was a report from Ryan Daly of WFSU up in Tallahassee about criminal justice reform in the state capitol. If that's something that you'd like to talk about, we'd like to hear from you. 813-239-9663, or you can email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. There's lots of other news to talk about as well. I want to let you know that it's 11:41 in the morning, and you're listening to Radioactivity on 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org, or the WMNF smartphone app. I'm Sean Canaan, filling in today for Rob Loroy, who will be back tomorrow. And there was not much of a nail biter in the Tampa mayoral runoff yesterday. Former Tampa police chief and mayor-elect Jane Castor spoke at her victory party last night. She garnered a whopping 73% of the vote, defeating retired banker and philanthropist David Straz. And, you know, one thing, I'm going to play some sound from Castor in just a second. And as I mentioned earlier, in about 20 minutes, you'll hear from her from this morning when Janelle Irwin interviewed her. But one thing I want to ask you about this mayoral election, if you think about it, the three runoff elections for Tampa City Council and the mayoral election, none of them were close at all in the runoff. And what do you think about this idea? What do you think about the idea of instant runoff voting, also called ranked choice voting? And we would have known months ago what we pretty much knew a couple of months ago, who the winners were, without having all the additional expense, without having all the additional negative attack ads. It's just a thought. What do you think about instant runoff voting, where back in the original election in March, we could have ranked our choices, and then instead of getting 49% or whatever it was, someone would have gotten more than 50%, whether that was Jane Castor or David Straz or Harry Cohen or whatever it would have been. We could have known the election results a lot sooner, not had all the expense of having another election, a runoff election. So that's called instant runoff voting, or ranked choice, where you rank your selections. Okay, maybe Jane Castor was your number one choice. Maybe Harry Cohen was your number two choice. Maybe David Straz was not one of your choices. And so we would have had a winner back then. For those four races, we might not have needed, we wouldn't have needed this runoff election. So that's just one thought. If you want to weigh in on that, I don't have a guest lined up about instant runoff voting or ranked choice voting, but we can discuss that if that's something you'd like to talk about. Well, here is Jane Castor, the mayor-elect now of Tampa, talking at her victory party last night. And I want to know what you think about the new Jane Castor era in Tampa. And I don't want to steal any thunder from Janelle's show, because that's what she'll be talking about, but she'll have some brand new audio that we haven't heard yet. But here's what Jane Castor said last night. And what do you think about it? 813-239-9663.
This city's going to change more in the next 10 years than it has in my entire lifetime. And we have one opportunity to create that city that we all want. The city that we want to live and work in, and the city that we'll be proud to pass off to the next generation. So I can tell you, standing here before you tonight as your next mayor, I have never been more hopeful or more excited about our city's future. And it's going to take each and every one of us to lift this city up and make it what we want it to be, the world-class city that we know Tampa can be. So if you will stand with me, I'll take us there. Thank you all.
All right, well, that's Jane Castor, the mayor-elect of the city of Tampa. As we mentioned earlier in the show, she will be the first out lesbian mayor of a major southeastern U.S. city. I guess they don't consider Houston to be the southeast. They had a lesbian mayor recently as well. But what do you think about that? 813-239-9663. We'll hear more from Jane Castor in just a minute. And as I mentioned, I don't want to stop mentioning this because it's really a big deal. We'll hear even more from her at 12:06 when Janelle Irwin takes the mic. So Bill in Spring Hill wants to talk about ranked choice voting. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that when I first voted 42 years ago, there were multiple candidates in the local election, and I asked my father, why do we have to pick one or the other? And he says, well, that's the way it is. But this thing where you pick just one candidate out of a list of three or more, you just pick the least worst candidate, and each seems like each selection gets worse and worse and worse. With ranked choice voting, you'd be making your best choice, and I think you would encourage better voters, better candidates to come out.
So some people might not be familiar with this, and for those of you who are, you know, bear with us. But give me an example. If you like, I could let's look at the 2000 election for a second. A lot of people really wanted to vote for Ralph Nader, and then a lot of those people decided, no, I'm not going to vote for Ralph Nader. I'm going to vote for Al Gore or George W. Bush or whatever it was, because Ralph Nader has no chance to win. And so that's when a lot of people were talking about ranked choice voting, or also called instant runoff voting, where you could rank and you could say, my number one choice is Ralph Nader, but if he comes in third, then my vote will instead go to my second choice, who might be George W. Bush, or it might be Al Gore, whatever. And a lot of people after that election were thinking, if we had ranked choice voting, the election results might have been different.
Right. And also, don't you remember Perot? A lot of people wanted Perot first, but they didn't feel like he had a chance, so they voted for Bush or Clinton, H.W. And same thing. Right. It's not right or left. It's non-political. It's non-partisan, non-profit. It's a way to go.
And I had a chance after the 2000 election. I wasn't a reporter at the time. I was just a citizen. And I was asking people about that. And whenever I would ask someone from the Democratic Party, look, your guy is not president, but if there had been ranked choice voting, chances are Al Gore would be sitting in the White House right now. What do you think about that? And they always got, scared, and they were nervous about ranked choice. Well, what if a third party, takes over or something? And it seemed to me like it was always the Democratic Party that was putting its foot down and saying no way on ranked choice voting.
Well, I think both major parties have a fear of the third party coming up, or even multiple candidates in the same, you could have done that with a primary where you have, in the last several primaries, you have 10 or 20 candidates from one party. That would narrow it down real fast. And these candidates, minor candidates who get lost in the first shuffle because people don't want to waste their vote, they might find out that they have quite a following. If, people are willing to vote for the no-name with the good ideas, then the big name with the tolerable ideas.
Well, the primaries, especially the 2020 Democratic primaries, is a great example, Bill. I'm glad you brought that up, because think about it. With 20 candidates, the person who wins a state might end up with like 6% or 7% of the vote, or 8%. Let's say Biden or Bernie Sanders gets 8% of the vote. They might blow the rest of the field away because the second place finisher might be at 5 or 4%. So, and in a lot of states, it's winner take all. So someone who gets 7 or 8% of the vote might get all of their delegates. A lot of in the primaries, though, it is a lot of times proportionally represented. But I'm just painting a worst case scenario here.
Yeah. Well, I think the minor candidates, whether they're no names from whatever city or state or business, that have the great ideas. I've really liked a lot of the off name people, but since no one's ever heard of them, and you can't even find them on TV, but if you search them on the internet, you'll if you're interested, you'll find these guys, people, or not guys, people with good ideas, and it also neutralizes the big money effect, because a lot of these smaller candidates don't have the money to power against the big guys.
All right, Bill, thanks so much. Did you have one more thing to say?
No, that's it.
Bill, thanks so much for calling in from Spring Hill. I appreciate the call. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can give us a call on at 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. You can also email us, DJ@WMNF.org, or text 813-433-0885. I have Gino in Tampa, who is getting a call or something. Hey, Gino, are you able to go on the...
Sure, I am.
All right, you want to talk about prison reform?
I do. So, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that we have to be really serious when we talk about prison reform, and really knowledgeable. See, prison reform has everything to do with history. it has everything to do with slavery. When people think that slavery was over in 1865, it wasn't. Slavery truly wasn't open until, seriously, until 1942. Well, all they did was change it to another name and start doing the things and start arresting blacks for, if you don't have a job, they would arrest you. I'm not sure if you know, it was called peonage. If you didn't have a job, they could come and arrest you, take you and lock you up, send you to prison, and then rent you out to that same farm that had your family in slavery. And it kept going, and it kept going, and it kept going. And this is where we are today. That's why blacks are 13% of the population, but so much more of the prison population. And until we get serious about, well, this is what happened, and this is where we are today, it's the end result of where we are today, they can never really do prison reform right. They can never do it a true justice until they actually get serious about it. They always want to wait 50 years later, like with that Groveland 3. They wait 70 years later and say, oh, they didn't do it. That's crazy. And this is the same thing with prison. This is what they're doing. And until they get really serious, and we'll know whoever gets in the office, we'll know by his words or her words if they're serious about that prison reform. And see, even though I'm talking about it, I've never been to prison. I worked at a prison for 10 years, but I've never been inside a prison as far as an inmate. But I know what's going on, and so does America. And I can't be the only black, or I can't be black and talk about it. Everybody has to talk about it. The white people have to call into WMNF and talk about that and say, this is what's happening to these people. We have to be one. And until they do that, prison reform will stay just like it is. Game time is nothing. Oh, sure, it gives the extra game time that the lady talked about on the interview. That's wonderful. But until they talk about what's serious and these police and the justice system, it'll never change.
So, Gino, I hear what you're saying is, you know, that there's so much historical injustice that's carried through to today, and there are small incremental changes that are being proposed. What do you think about incremental changes?
See, no, because they always say that. Oh, it's going to take time. It's going to take time. It's going to take time. Do you know that blacks, the majority of blacks are tired of hearing that? It's going to take time. It's going to take time. If it hadn't changed in 400 years, if it hadn't changed in 200 years, if it hadn't changed since 1942, it's never going to change. And when I say the real black, because just because my skin is black, And I'm a Negro in America, does not make me a black person. Now, I don't know if you know what that means or not, but the blacks that listen to this, they know what it means. Just because I am black does not make me black. For instance, Thomas, that's in the judge, he's not black. He's black in color, but he's not a black man for real. The guy that's in the cabinet for the only black that's in the cabinet for Trump, the doctor, he's black in color. He's not black for real, though. The incremental change means nothing because they keep giving us this little, here, take this spoon, take this little spoonful, take this spoonful. No, change the whole system. What's right is right. Wrong is wrong. Right is right. There's a PBS special out about what I'm talking about right now. Everybody go look at it. It just came out. A PBS special. It's called Slavery by Another Name. PBS had it out. And then you'll find out what I'm talking about.
All right, Gino. Slavery by Another Name. Thank you for that impassioned call. I appreciate your thoughts. And you said a lot that was really controversial, perhaps. So if people would like to agree with you or disagree with you, give us a call, 813-239-9663. We have some emails to read and some texts. If you'd like to text in, it's 813-433-0885 or dj@wmnf.org is our email address. It's 11:55 in the morning. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm filling in for Rob Lori on Radioactivity on 88.5 FM and wmnf.org. I'm going to read some of these emails and then go back to your phone calls if you'd like to call in. 813-239-9663. I do want to remind you that Janelle Irwin has has an interview with Jane Castor that she just did maybe a half hour ago that she's going to play for you in a few minutes. So stay tuned to WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. Steve in St. Pete says, I'm totally for ranked choice voting. We should have it. The entire nation should have it. It makes all kinds of sense for everybody, but the powerful super rich, big money, big power doesn't want it. Negative advertising is too effective. There's too much apathy, so we don't have it. Yeah. So Steve brings up a good point, that, you know, one, you and I might think, hey, it'd be great if we didn't have this second expensive runoff election. Well, what about the people who sell advertising, or what about political consultants? It seems like they have a financial interest in prolonging the elections and making them as bare knuckle as possible, making them as expensive and dirty perhaps as possible, because it just means, you know, more and more and more ads and responses to ads and so forth. So thanks, Steve in St. Pete, for that. Also, Chip in Tampa says ranked choice voting may be the best way to remove the establishment's stranglehold on politics, even more effective than campaign finance reform, which would be more difficult to implement. So there's Chip in Tampa saying the establishment would lose if there's ranked choice voting, which might tell you why we don't have it, perhaps. I'm going to get to the Jennifer and Karen in just a second, but let me read one more text here from the 813 area code. We need instant runoff in Trump and Hillary election. Neither got near 50% of the vote. That's true. There was no clear winner in the popular vote, that is, in the election of 2016. Ranked choice, it's more complicated when you throw in the Electoral College, of course, but I think that if there had been ranked choice voting, some people may have voted differently than just picking one, their least unfavorite candidate, perhaps. All right, well, let's enough of me talking. Let's go to the phones. And we have Jennifer in Tampa would like to talk about prison reform. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I also wanted to add my 2 cents about the ranked choice choice voting, and just say we also need to get rid of the Electoral College. But as far as the prison reform, I'm standing with Gino on that. We can't just do incremental changes. We have to be serious. And he's correct that prison was just another form of slavery for a very long time. And it actually kind of still is, because the prisons have gone to a for-profit format. So there's a lot of incentive to put people in jail.
Thank you for your thoughts, Jennifer. Because we're near the end of the show, I'm going to move on, if that's all right. Karen in Dunedin, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
I'm just agreeing with Dino and what she just said.
Ditto, as they say on a different radio show.
Yeah, ditto.
All right, you can add more if you'd like, Karen. I'm not trying to rush you.
No, that's okay. That was all I had to say.
Okay, good. Well, thanks for calling in. And we have also on the line, we have Leslie in Tampa would also like to weigh in on prison reform.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to call in support of that last caller. He said, you know, white people need to speak up, and we do. So just want to support that, and also suggest watching the movie, I think it's called The 13th, that was very informational on this topic.
The 13th, and I'm not sure if it's still on Netflix or on some of the streaming services, but yeah, that's a great film. So Leslie, thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate you calling in and weighing in on this topic.
Sure, thanks for what you do.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank everyone who called in and everyone who texted and emailed today. If you're still on hold, or if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, call me at 813-238-8001 extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. That'll probably be next Monday in this case. And you can join the conversation online at WMNF.org/news. And don't forget, you can watch the first half of this show on Facebook Live. It won't be live anymore, of course, but we'll put that up on our website as well, WMNF.org/news. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. I want to thank our engineers, Blanny Whalen and Ed Green. Thanks so much for your help. I'm Sean Canaan. Rob Lori will be back hosting Radioactivity tomorrow morning at 11. Special show coming up next. Stay tuned now for Midpoint. Janelle Irwin is filling in today for NOLA, and she just interviewed the new Tampa mayor-elect, Jane Castor. And so that's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland. Thank you so much for listening on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Almighty God is a living man.